is no defense. It's just that.
Welcome to the broadcast. Did you hear about the murder of Robert Osborne? On November 20th, in Kansas City, Missouri, Osborne was bicycling home when two blacks, out of boredom, we're told, shot him for sport. In fact, Osborne was hunted. The blacks, after stalking Osborne in their car, fired two blasts from a shotgun, missing him. Frustrated, they drove ahead of Osborne and waited behind a tree. As Osborne bicycled past, the black murderer leapt from his lair and shot Osborne in the head, killing him. The local media described the killing as random, despite the fact that Osborne was white and the killers were black, despite the fact that blacks are 7 times more likely to kill than whites, despite, for example, that blacks are only 12% of the U.S. population, but have killed 839 whites, while comparatively, whites were only responsible for the deaths of 362 blacks for the year 1998. Despite all these facts, the murder of Robert Osborne was deemed random. Now, when I went to school, I was taught the word random had certain connotations, such as a thing without structure or organization, or even something unknown or unexplainable. But there is an explanation for the murder of Robert Osborne. The cause of Robert Osborne's murder lies in the innate biological differences between blacks and whites. Biological differences that have been well investigated, though largely ignored and with tragic consequences. Blacks, for instance, have higher levels of testosterone, a hormone associated with aggression, and they have lower levels of IQ. There are many more significant biological differences between blacks and whites, and for a deeper explanation of these differences, I strongly encourage all listeners to acquire Philip Rushton's book entitled Race, Evolution, and Behavior. You know, the use of adjectives like random or unexplainable to describe crimes great and small is quite common today. Some years ago, I recall seeing Elie Wiesel, the Jewish Holocaust activist, on the public news program, The News Hour, with Jim Lehrer. In a rather lengthy segment, Wiesel was asked to explain, why did the Holocaust happen? Despite considerable rambling, Mr. Wiesel failed to explain adequately, I felt, the phenomenon of National Socialism and the Holocaust incident. Such evil defied explanation, he said. How, Wiesel rhetorically asked as he shrugged his shoulders, could a modern and progressive state like Germany succumb to such evil? How indeed, Mr. Wiesel? Well, you know, I'm not one to believe in evil spirits, magic, or divine intervention. I think there are rational explanations for the way things are. There is a very good explanation for the rise of National Socialism in Germany and that regime's hostility towards Jews. The events of the 20th century are hardly unexplainable, as Mr. Wiesel would like you to believe. Just as the murder of Robert Osborne is hardly random, there's been a great deal left unexplained about the Russian Revolution in 1917. The first serious book I read about the Russian Revolution was written by a Polish Jew living in America named Richard Pipes. Pipes emphasizes the role of the intelligentsia, the coterie of intellectuals which he sees as largely responsible for the tragic events of 1917. Pipes weaves a long thread extending back into the centuries to explain the formation of ideas which propelled Russia into a catastrophe. Though I've reduced Pipes' arguments greatly, I felt his explanation left much unexplained. How could a nation destroy everything it had known for a millennium? How could a people slaughter their rulers, destroy churches, starve millions, and plunge itself into civil war? Pipes' explanation just didn't make sense. You know, back in the 70s, there was a popular quip, only Nixon could go to China, By this was meant that only a supposed staunch anti-communist like Nixon could negotiate with communist China. Similarly, I suppose, it takes a Jew to name a Jew. This Jew, though, is not Richard Pipes, but Yuri Slezkin. What Pipes omits in his history of Russia, Slezkin reveals. In his newly released book, The Jewish Century, Slezkin spills the beans. The beans being the role Jews played in overthrowing the Russian government. Slezkin tellingly describes Jews as Stalin's willing executioners. I invite the listeners to read Kevin McDonald's review of Slezkin's book, which will be linked to in this program's broadcast transcript posted on VNN Forum. But really, the beans were spilled long ago. Even before the revolution had settled down, warning flags were being raised. Winston Churchill, among others, wrote many warnings. In the Sunday Herald of 8th of February 1920, Churchill wrote, "This movement among the Jews is not new. From the days of Spartacus Weishaupt to those of Karl Marx and Trotsky, Bella Kuhn, Rosa Luxemburg, and Emma Goldman, this worldwide conspiracy for the overthrow of civilization and the reconstruction of society on the basis of arrested development, of envious malevolence, and of impossible equality has been steadily growing." Churchill continues, "There is no need to exaggerate the part played in the creation of Bolshevism and in the actual bringing about of the Russian Revolution by these international, for the most part, atheistic Jews. It is certainly a very great one. It probably outweighs all others. With the possible exception of Lenin, the leading figures are Jews. Moreover, the principal inspiration and driving power comes from Jewish leaders." End quote. Churchill was not alone in warning the world, but the warnings went unheeded. With the arrival of Slezkin's book, there seems to be a willingness within certain quarters to grudgingly admit the Jews' role in subverting Russia. If crucial facts can be ignored from such titanic historical events, just think what little lies can be inserted into local news stories, or omitted, like that in the murder of Robert Osborne. When researching the case of Robert Osborne, I discovered the employees at the grocery store where he worked held a memorial in his name. This murder and the grief it has caused ought never to have happened. If someone had only said, "Hey, did you hear what Jefferson and Lincoln said about those blacks? They aren't like us, and we can't share the same government." I wonder, too, if anyone ever asked, "Hey, did you hear what Churchill said? Look at what they did to Russia. Let's not let those Jews into our country. They're dangerous and not like us." Well, if such words were uttered, they were ignored. You know, I bet decades in the future, some Jew will publish a book explaining that blacks and whites evolved differently, and that the reasons for our conflicts and differences lie in biology and evolution. Perhaps a book like Philip Rushton's Race, Evolution, and Behavior, published in 1995? Well, I'd like to close this broadcast with a reading from Robert Osborne's memorial page, which will be linked to off of this transcript. Robert Osborne, 1962 to 2005. Robert had a robust personality that was sheathed in an equally impressive 6 foot, 200-pound frame. He had soft blue eyes and blonde hair. He and his three brothers enjoyed family vacations, camping, and boating. Robert earned numerous medals and honors, including Eagle Scout. He took pride in hiking as many as 20 miles on many historic scout trails in the Midwest. Robert was a standout performer on the water polo and swim teams. After his junior year, Robert was selected for a special 2-month scientific research program that was sponsored by the National Science Foundation. As an honor student, Robert was consistently ranked in the top 10% of his class. Robert earned a pilot's license and was a member of the Civil Air Patrol. He attended Purdue University, where he majored in engineering and demonstrated advanced abilities in mathematics, culminating in graduate-level coursework. Robert made people feel special with his creative gifts. He liked to bring home home-brewed beer based on distinctive Belgian and German formulas to the family gatherings. He just wanted to make everybody feel happy. Thank you for listening.